I think all of us would agree that if we want to be more successful in sales, that we have to have higher quality relationships with both our prospects and our clients. But if we kind of work backwards, in order to have higher quality relationships, we really need to be having higher quality conversations. And in order to have higher quality conversations, well, that's going to be the topic of today's episode of the Sales Playbook Podcast. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 20,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so before we begin, I have two really cool freebies for you. The first one is my newsletter. If you haven't signed up for my newsletter, let me tell you, I offer all kinds of free tips from time to time. I'll offer special discounts on some of the programs that we have coming up. I send out alerts letting everybody know, hey, we have a webinar coming up, we have a course, or maybe we're doing some kind of an event or whatever. But if you'd like to sign up, get some really cool free information, all you have to do is go to yoursalesplaybook.com/sales tips. S-A-L-E-S-T-I-P-S, all one word, no hyphens or anything else, right? So let me say it again, yoursalesplaybook.com/sales tips. The other freebie that I have for you, if you've been enjoying the Sales Playbook Podcast, and you'd like to, number one, never miss a beat and get alerted whenever we have new ones, and I usually update these at a rate of about 2 to 3 a month. But even more so, if you'd like access to over 300 of these free audio sales lessons, all you have to do is go to yoursalesplaybook.com/app, yoursalesplaybook.com/app. And having said that, we got to get down to business here. So what I was talking about at the very beginning was that if we want to experience sales at a much higher level, especially, it's still the new year, folks. I don't care if all of us say, yeah, that seems like so long ago, or maybe like, you know, like you've given up already. And I don't say that sarcastically. I say that more statistically, because right about the third or the fourth week in January, we found a lot of people just going right back to their old behaviors. The buzz of the whole holiday and new year thing has worn off, and we're right back to business as usual. Well, if you want to experience sales and success at a much higher level, well, then we all have to agree that, you know, it's important that we have higher quality relationships, right, with both prospects and clients. But now, working backwards, in order to have those high quality relationships, we need to be having higher quality conversations. Now, if we want to have higher quality conversations, you ready for this? We need to be asking higher quality questions. So again, if we want to have higher quality conversations with prospects, with clients, I don't care if it's at a networking event, whatever, it could be in your personal life too, by the way. If you want to be having higher quality conversations, we need to be asking higher quality questions. But here's a $1 million question. How do we do that? So let's talk a little bit about that. So there's a lot of ways to do this. And what I want to do today is to divide our thinking up into two sections. So the first part, I really think it's important that we understand the importance of questions, because many people see questions more as a vehicle to obtain information, right? So let me say that again. A lot of people, they only see questions as a vehicle to obtain information, especially in the sales process, right? We ask questions to find out things that we need to know in order to move forward, or maybe even, like, you know, shake hands in part as friends. But great questions do so much more than that. So let's talk a little bit about that. The first thing that a great question will do is it allows us to take control without being controlling. Do you think there's a difference between taking control and being perceived as controlling. Do you think there's a difference? I mean, do you think if somebody perceives you as being controlling, that they may like kind of shut down and maybe become more reserved? So you really, in a way, if you think about it, you have two extremes that could happen. And one extreme is that we become, we're perceived as controlling, and people are holding back information. That's pretty important. But the other side of it is, if we don't take some degree of control, well, then the quality of that conversation can suffer. Well, how? Well, did you ever talk to somebody who is like really, really price obsessed? Or they're focusing on things that at the end of the day, yeah, the customer is right and all this and that, but it's really not that important. They're missing a bigger picture. And they're focusing so much on one thing that they're at, you would actually be doing them a disservice to continue to focus and just harp on that one thing. There's so many other things that they might be missing. And also, by the way, I think we also do them a disservice because they could make the wrong decision. I think many times, I mean, did you ever have that happen where, you know, you lose a deal, and we're not being poor sports here, but I mean, you're losing a deal and you're saying like, I never should have lost that deal. I mean, they really focused on the wrong criteria here. Well, good questions, great questions can help us take that control and gently guide that prospect or even client by the hand, gently guide them as opposed to being controlling. So that's the first thing. The second thing, speaking of gently guiding somebody, a great question will guide a prospect or a client, right, toward discovering things on their own instead of you having to pitch them and force feed them an idea. Let me say that one again. A great question will gently guide a prospect or a client toward discovering something on their own versus you having to pitch them and force feed them that. So here's another question, right? I mean, wouldn't it be crazy? Isn't it kind of crazy that I'm asking you all these questions in a podcast all about questions? I mean, how dare this Castain guy like practice what he preaches, right? So here's the deal. Do you think that someone is more likely to believe a conclusion they've arrived to on their own or one that someone is trying to convince them to embrace? Do you think somebody is going to be more likely to believe something and embrace something and own something that they've arrived to on their own, like by their own accord, as opposed to you and I having to quote unquote sell them on that? So that right there might be something that's happening and forcing you to like get a lot of objections and pushback and people stalling and delaying and all these excuses and everything else. So the third thing that great questions will do beyond just giving you information, right? We don't want to discount the importance of information here. But above and beyond that, great questions help you to establish rapport and credibility. Now, you know, a lot of the time when we talk about rapport, especially, I mean, this one is like an old favorite of the sales profession. If I were to ask you right now, hey, what do you like? What are some of the things that you do to establish rapport, especially with a potential client, like where you really haven't, like, you know, earned their respect yet? How do you establish that rapport with them? A lot of people will say things like, well, you know, like I'll chit chat. I'll try to find some common interests. For example, if I'm in their office and I see, you know, pictures of them on the golf course, I'll talk about golf. Maybe I'll see pictures of kids or grandchildren and I'll talk about those things or whatever. You know, sometimes they'll see that they graduated from a certain institution. Maybe they know people there. Maybe they're affiliated with that institution or graduated from there. And it goes on and on and on. There's certainly nothing wrong with doing those things, but I'm here to tell you there's nothing like that's going to make you stand out in doing that. I'm not saying like, you know, just be all business and, you know, just be like, you know, Castain from New York, like, let's get down to business, like, let's not have any chit chat or what. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying please understand that that's very, very typical. So a lot of the time when we're thinking about things like that to establish rapport, we forget that a great question makes people look at you in a very different way. So let me ask you a question again about questions. Do you think people judge us by the questions that we ask them? Is it possible that people have been judging you on the questions that you've been asking them? So if we agree that people do judge us on the quality of the questions that we're asking, do you think as you look at your questions that maybe there are a few times that you fell short because the questions you were asking kind of fell short? Maybe they were too focused on just gaining information for the sake of gaining information instead of asking questions that got people to really think and really challenge them and get them thinking and get them involved and engaged in discussion. So I want you to think about that and you really have to be honest with yourself, right? And that's kind of tough for us in sales. But I want you to realize something. When you establish rapport and credibility with people, especially prospects and clients, they become more open with us. And when people are more open, it's a lot easier for us to help them. And when it's easier for us to help them, that to me is how we provide value. And that's, if you've listened to me before, that's one of my pet peeves. When people just love to, I see it on LinkedIn all the time. It's like, well, you need to be providing value. And people say in sales discussion, well, you didn't provide value. Well, I very rarely do I run into someone who mentions providing value and then tells us how to do it. I see lots of people, including other sales trainers, talking about providing value, and really, like, they're talking about it at a real high level, at a real philosophical level. And that stuff is great for wanting to sound smart. And that stuff is great for having a really, like, riveting type of conversation. But unless we really start talking about how you provide value, it really means dick. I mean, seriously, it does. I mean, you can be the smartest person in the room, but you're selling a whole lot of nothing. So I like specifics when I'm talking about things, especially when I'm preaching to you guys. I don't want to just become an evangelist for, questions and providing value. Well, I'm here to tell you, here's like one of the best ways to provide value. You earn somebody's trust enough for them to open up and tell you what's really on their mind. You earn someone's trust enough for someone to say, here are the things that I am struggling with. You earn someone's trust to know what excites them, the things that get them like really perking up. You earn someone's trust enough for them to tell you, these are the opportunities that we want to have as an organization. And then when you're able to deliver on those things through your solution, well, I'm thinking you're providing value. Right? So I want you to start, stop thinking about rapport just in terms of the certificate on the wall and the pictures and the chit chat and everything else. By all means, do those things. I'm not here to tell you that you can't do those and you shouldn't do those. That's your business if you want to roll that way. I'm just saying, understand that there's a much deeper level than talking about somebody's interest in golf or whatever it is. And I'm also here to tell you that there's a lot of sections of the U.S., especially my neck of the woods, where people are not like blocking out time to sit and talk about their golf game with you. So you really need to understand that as well. But I have one more thing for you to think about before I go into the second part of the podcast. Great questions can get all the stakeholders involved and engaged. I mean, how many times have we been, more and more of these decisions are being made by committee. So we go into these meetings and many times you kind of have the alpha male in the room who's taken charge and being outspoken and everything. And we tend to put a lot of emphasis on them, right? They're the one who's really like outspoken and opinionated and everything. So let's put our attention on them. And they're kind of, it's hard to neglect them because they're the ones talking over everybody and everything else. And yet you have the ones who are being silent. And I maintain that many times those people can be the most deadliest people in the room because you don't know where you stand with them. And you haven't gotten them to open their mouth. And I promise you that they may not open their mouth in front of you. But when that meeting's over, they're going to be giving someone a piece of their mind. So what we want to do is we want to get them talking. And I just want to share a quick story with you. And I try not to tell stories that sound like I'm bragging or I'm boasting or anything. You don't need that. That's also not going to serve you. But I have to tell you, one of the things that I'm most proud of in my sales training practice is when I meet with an organization, many times, like after that initial meeting especially, and I go in and I get everyone talking and sharing ideas, and it becomes like super collaborative because now we're like at the peer level. It's not me versus them, them versus me. I'm better than you. I'm calling the shots. No, I'm calling the shots in a territorial war in their conference room. What it is now is a bunch of people rolling up their sleeves and having a collaborative conversation. And in many cases, it's a bunch of people talking about things that up until that point, nobody ever asked them about, and nobody ever really allowed them to speak of those things and really express their opinions and their thoughts. And many of you have heard me say this. I really believe that everyone has a story and wants to be heard. But many times that story is not heard because of the alpha male in the room, or because they're really afraid to speak up, or quite simply, because nobody ever asked them for their story. They were busy telling their story and pitching them and talking over them and one-upping them and everything else. So the best compliment that I just never get tired of hearing is when people follow me out after that meeting, or many times if it's like a long distance involved and we're doing this like on a conference call or a WebEx, people say, hey, Paul, you know, could you stay on the call? I really want to talk to you afterwards. And people thanking me for getting them to talk about things that no one got them to talk about. And I really think that's a huge part of what we need to be doing. And I can tell you that it's only within like the last decade of like a 30-year sales career that I started hearing that a lot. But I can also point to those conversations and say, it was at that time that I started making the real money in sales, that I really advanced to a level that dwarfed all the other years when I was ranked 12th and I took sales teams, you know, to the top 5 and all that kind of stuff. That's when I started making the real money, when I started getting everyone involved and engaged and talking and excited and even, folks, emotional. Because that's part of what a great question will do. It will get people, it will jumpstart emotions. Emotions are very, very important to the sales process because it keeps people from clinging to the status quo. We've got to get the emotions going. And a great question will do that. There are certain types of questions that just, I mean, it's just like a push button for the emotions. So it's important. So let's go on to this other part that I wanted to share with you. Really, again, how do we ask better questions? So the first part, I said, well, in understanding all the great things that great questions will do. But now let's get into some of the mechanics of asking a better question. First of all, you really want to make sure that the majority of your questions, when you do a discovery call, a needs analysis, whatever you want to call it, we move beyond spec-related questions. And a spec-related question are things like, and this is particularly true once you have a piece of business, as opposed to when you're courting someone to get their business. Once you have their business, many times we start talking about specs. We start talking about quantities and sizes and logistical things like delivery dates and how much to your Philadelphia, you know, location, how much going out to California, all that kind of stuff, right? But, you know, that's, to me, if we're focusing on that, we're really not asking the highest quality question, which, again, leads to not having higher quality conversations, which then kind of frowns at the idea of us having higher caliber relationships which get in the way of sales. So what we should be doing is having more questions centered around problems, opportunities, barriers to both, outcomes that they want to get. I mean, yes, specs are important. We need them. You need those details. There's no doubt about it. If you hire me to come out and train your sales team, I'm going to need to know how many people and when you want to do that. I'm going to need to know all that. But I think the real conversation is going to start when I start asking you questions like, hey, if you don't mind, what prompted you to consider hiring somebody to come in and train your sales team? Right? I mean, those are going to be like really important. I mean, I'm kind of think it's important for me to want to know, okay, how many salespeople do you have? Okay, you told me you have 20 people. Of those 20 people, you know, give me a breakdown. You know, how many of them are veterans? How many of them are newbies? You know, that kind of thing. But give me a further breakdown and let me know how many people are absolutely kicking ass for you that are your rock stars. How many of them are missing quota by like just a little bit, like missed it by that much type of things, you know, or types of people? You know, how many of them are chronically missing quota? How many of them are making it, but they're kind of like plateaued sales reps, right? That you're never going to get them. They're like old dogs that you're never going to teach a new trick. But you can't reprimand them because they're above quota. But they just never go, they're like flatline now, right? So it's the quality of those questions are going to be important, but we've got to move beyond the specs. We've got to get into problems, opportunities, barriers, outcomes, and there's a lot more to it, but those are some of the things you need to be thinking about. Number two, the second way that you're going to ask a better question is by focusing, right? Like stop focusing on just the pain and start thinking, in addition to pain, start thinking about opportunities. I'm going to say that again. Stop focusing on pain exclusively and also start thinking about opportunities. See, there's this thing in sales that's been around since the beginning of time, but I noticed it got really, really popular right around the time that spin selling came out. I'm guessing what, like late 80s or something like that, maybe early 90s spin selling came out. And, you know, everybody was saying, oh, you got to focus on the pain. See, one of the things that you need to know about that statement is that it's absolutely spot on the truth, but it's a half truth, right? So let me tell you the part that's the truth, and I know you know this, but I feel like it's important that we just kind of get the obvious out of the way, because it might not be so obvious to you, because you might have been saying, yeah, duh, and got to find the pain. But sometimes we say something so often that we forget. It's almost like using a word that you really don't know what the hell it means. You just kind of know how to use it, but you really don't own the word. Well, it's the same thing with a sales tactic. So finding the pain, what you need to understand is that, and this is kind of like a Tony Robbins-ism, is that there are really two driving forces with human beings. There's our need to avoid pain, and our desire to do things that are pleasurable. Of the two things, you will absolutely positively do more to avoid pain and get rid of pain than you will to embrace opportunity and pleasure. But now, if you go into a sales situation and every one of your questions is focused around hopefully trying to find the pain, because everybody's been telling you your whole sales career, find the pain, find the pain. Did you find the pain, Paul? Oh, I couldn't find the pain. Well, in those instances where you focused exclusively on pain and there wasn't any, you left with a whole lot of nothing. Now, what's happened now is that you got a lot of sales trainers that get on this bandwagon. You've got a lot of sales leadership putting the blame on you and saying, well, you just didn't ask the right questions because everybody has pain. Well, I'm going to tell you that gets an all caps bullshit. Not everybody has pain. And the example, thank God I've been able to give this now for several years. I've been giving it like for several years on this podcast. If you came to meet with me and you were focusing exclusively on finding my pain, you would leave with a whole lot of nothing. Why? Because I've had year-over-year growth since I started my sales training company in 2011. I've had several years where I've doubled and triple the amount of business that I've done. My average webinar, for example, has on the low end 300 to 450 people at $99 a piece. And in some cases, I've had as many as 700 people. I've had one or two that it's climbed over 1,000. I don't find anything painful in that. I don't find anything painful in the Fortune 500s that I'm consulting for, and the speaking engagements, and, you know, even being able to revise my model with Castain Training Systems, so I'm not traveling as much anymore. So if you came in to talk to me and you were looking to find my pain, I'm here to tell you that you would leave empty-handed. But if you ask me questions to identify opportunities for my business, where I'm not going to be sitting here going, woe is me, but if you came in and you had a way to show me how to get the average attendance from, say, 350 to 450 up to even 500 or 600 attendees, or you showed me how to grow my email list from about 45,000 right now to a much higher number or whatever. See, those things aren't painful for me, but they're opportunity. So one of the things I want you to understand is that you can't just ask pain-focused questions. You need to think opportunities. Next, you got to be able to start asking. If you want to ask better questions and you want to have better quality conversations with people, you ready for this? This one is going to be the toughest suggestion I've made to you today. You need to start asking ballsier questions. Now, I want to be clear. When I say ask ballsier questions, you see, there's a lot of people in this world who love to tell you that I'm a real caller like I see it person, you know, tough love or whatever it is. And I think we would all agree that many of those people, they're assholes. They're using that as an excuse to be rude to you or to be demeaning or talk down to you. See, I don't mean it in that context, nor do I want you to think about it in that context. But there are elephants in the room, folks, that we tend to avoid because we think it would be rude. It just, we shouldn't talk about it or whatever. You know, it could, and let me give you some examples. It could be you're meeting with somebody, they've experienced a lot of turnover in their organization. You might be speaking with somebody and there is, you know, a lot of problems with morale. Or how about online reviews, that they're getting some really bad reviews, like with Better Business Bureau or Google or with, you know, Glassdoor or whatever. It could be some bad PR things that are out there. It could be some things that you've noticed with their culture. It could be things even with their opinions, because nobody has the balls to challenge those opinions. So you've, and I really do believe it's time and place. For example, I think it's a huge questioning mistake, right? That in your needs analysis, when you start with questions that might be a little more forward or intrusive, I think you should ease into them with more situational type of questions, spec-related questions, safer types of questions, questions to verify your information. And then ease into those more forward, intimate questions, but don't avoid them. And I'm here to tell you that the right types of clients that you should be going after, because you, I hope you understand that as much as they're judging you to see if, like, you're a good fit for them, you absolutely have the right to judge if they're a good fit for you. The right types of clients for you are going to respect the fact that you had the balls to ask them the questions that none of your competitors did. But again, I really need to, as Ricky Ricardo would say, do some splaining on that one. This is not an excuse for you to be rude or for you to be a dick. This is more like talking about something that is getting in the way of them embracing the opportunity, or is causing them to have more pain, or it's, you know, we always say the customer is right. Bullshit, the customer is always right. They're not. Many times they're wrong, but the art is in, and my money is on the person who knows how, not necessarily to tell them that they're wrong, but to ask them a good quality question to open their eyes, like we said earlier, and gently guide them away from that opinion and maybe see something that would serve them in the future. It's like, you know, like people love to repeat things over on LinkedIn a lot. And there was one thing that's been making the rounds even before LinkedIn was around. Like, the worst words that are ever spoken in business is, we've always done it this way. Okay. It's absolutely right. But, you know, what do we do when we hear people say that to us? We've always done it this way. Well, we challenge them by preaching them to them and pitching them and just trying to argue a point and debating, when instead, if we had some really good questions to open their eyes and gently guide them, that can make all the difference in the world. Here's the next thing, or the next way for us to ask better questions. This one you're going to want to say, duh, but I want you to hear me out. Get in the habit of putting more pauses after your questions. The reason why, there's a lot of reasons why you should be pausing after, well, not just after you're asking your question, I'm sorry, after you get their answer, right? So I ask a question of you, you answer it, instead of just rushing onto the next question or validating what you said or like one-upping what you said and telling my war story or whatever, if I just throw in a little bit of silence, what do you think happens? Very interesting thing about human beings and silence. There is a nervous need to fill silence. And if you were to guess between a prospect, right? Which is a combination, for those of you who don't know, right? I don't want you to think I'm an idiot here, but I mean, you should know by now that a prospect is a combination of a prospect and a client, at least in my crazy mind. But if you were to sit with a prospect and you were to ask them a question, they answer it, and you were to be quiet or whatever after the answer. I mean, typically, who do you think fills that silence? Do you think it's the prospect? Or if you're meeting with a client, do you think it's them? Or a prospect, do you think it's the prospect? Or do you think more often than not it's the sales rep? It's usually the sales rep who fills it. It is a nervous need. But yet, I'm here to tell you that some strategically placed pauses, which is also kind of a tongue twister for me today, but if you put some strategically placed pauses, the only reason why I repeated that is I needed to prove to myself that I could say that two times at like just even a medium type of speed. But in fact, I completely forgot what I was going to say now. How do you like that? See, I'm trying to be cute here, and then I forget what the hell I was going to say. And no, I am not going to edit it out. But no, here's the deal. If you were to put these strategically placed pauses in your conversation, number one, you're going to have them filling the silence. And it's actually a very powerful continuation technique. So if you don't know what a continuation technique is a question or a technique that we use with a prospect or a client to encourage them to continue or expand upon their thought. So a continuation question or a continuation technique in this context is anything that we put in place to encourage a client or a prospect or a prospect to continue or expand upon their thought. But the other thing too, we talked about rapport and credibility. Let me give you a little secret here. Notice I'm like getting dramatic and lowering my voice as if like my neighborhood right now is surrounded by people trying to obtain this top secret information I'm giving you, right? I don't know why I'm lowering my voice. Because it's like I'm talking too effing loud here to begin with. Too hyper. So when you are the one who's remaining calm and quiet and you're not the one that's filling it with nervous chatter, if you will, because usually the quality of the shit we're saying when we're nervous is really not up to par. We got to be honest here, right? Well, I'm thinking that people are going to start to respect you at a higher level. If you can remain quiet and calm and a little more deliberate and thoughtful, and you're pondering what they're saying, people are going to look at you and say, wow, that person really has a lot of confidence. I don't know that they're going to consciously think that, but I think they're going to feel that about you at a subconscious level. And feeling things about people at a subconscious level is really where our best relationships are felt. Our best relationships, I feel, are not necessarily articulated as they are felt. Think about your loved ones. Think about, like, if I were to say to you, like, or if you were to say to me, hey, Castaigne, I know you married your high school sweetheart. You met her in 1983. You know, how do you feel about her? I mean, to me, it's very hard for me to convey that into words because it's more of a feeling. It's more, you know, something that you carry around with you. But it's the same thing here. And I also think the same thing is true when we disconnect with people and we walk away saying, I don't know what it is. There was just something about that person. I can't put my finger on it. And it can become kind of distracting at that point, or at least cause us to avoid contact with them. Now, the final thing that I want to throw at you is as far as like how we ask better questions, this one right here, I think is going to be the most valuable thing for you to understand. But the best way for you to ask kick-ass questions is having a deep enough general understanding so that you can ask the questions to learn more to get a deeper understanding. Let me say that again, and then let me tell you how you do this. So you really want to have a deep enough general understanding so that you could ask the kick-ass questions to get a much deeper understanding so that you can learn more. Now, how do you do that? Well, first of all, one of the things at your disposal is do meticulous pre-call planning research and preparation, right? That's one way. Another way that you can do it, and I talk about this a lot, this is a quarterly exercise that I recommend to all of my coaching clients, is to fire yourself, mentally fire yourself once every quarter. Sit kind of quietly and rehire yourself as the people you want to serve. So in my case, I serve three types of people: sales reps, sales leaders, business owners. And I go one at a time. And what I do is I have like kind of like this thought process. The first thing I think about is the pain. If I were this person, if I were a sales rep, what would be some of the things that I would find painful and challenging and keep me up at night, so to speak, get under my skin, maybe even scare me, right? And different variations of things that are painful. And then you remember I told you before, we can't stop there. We also have to think about like opportunities. So I take a different approach and I say, okay, if I were like this sales rep that I'm trying to sell to, what would be some things that would be opportunities for me? And I list all of those things. And again, I vary the question a little bit. I vary this idea of opportunity. And I think not just opportunity, what would be some things that would really excite me in a really cool way and really, you know, help me gain like momentum and be more enthusiastic about my job? Things like that. And I think about that. And there's a lot more to this thought process that I'm actually going to be sharing during a webinar that I have coming up. But for now, I do this once a quarter. And then once I come up with this list of all the things that I would find painful, all the things that I would really deem as opportunities that I would be looking to embrace as a sales rep, I challenge myself to come up with a list of 25 for each, because I'm telling you, that is just, it's like a hump and a half to do that. It really forces you to think and get into their shoes and view the world from their perspective. Once I do that, and only once I'm able to come up with that list for each of them and a few other things like I mentioned, then I start coming up with the questions to probe those areas. That's how you ask a higher caliber question. By first understanding things enough and having that empathy thing going on, that you can now ask the questions to get a much deeper understanding. But you know, it's a weird thing, folks. You almost have to have a deep understanding to get a much deeper understanding. And the question I have for you, do you have that deep understanding? Have you done this exercise that I've talked about? Maybe informally you've done it, where you think maybe you've talked about it in your sales meetings with your sales team, or with maybe your sales manager. You've had these talks when you've reviewed accounts or whatever it is. But whether you've like not done this or you've done this informally, I would invite you to do it formally. Because when we formalize a lot of these things, see, now you've got to play in a playbook that can be repeated. And if you set a recurring reminder on your phone to go off once a quarter, it's going to keep you from becoming irrelevant to people and out of touch. Because, again, business moves at the speed of light. And we want to be relevant to those that we're trying to serve. In order to be relevant to those that we're trying to serve, well, we have to continually think from their perspective and be in tuned to the things that are challenging them and the things that excite them. So the last thing I want to leave you with is just want to let you know, we're actually going to be diving like head first into this topic. As you could probably imagine, there's a lot more to this. And I'm hoping today I opened up your eyes a little bit more to it, maybe gave you some aha moments or whatever, but we're going to be diving head first into this topic during, you know, this whole topic of sales questions during our How to Ask Awesome Sales Questions webinar. It's going to be on February 8th at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. I'll just give you a very quick overview of what we're going to be covering. We're going to be talking about six questioning mistakes that actually cost you business. We're going to go more into detail on how to create an arsenal of awesome sales questions. And one of the things, I did not announce it yet, by the way, it's not even up on the website, but I'm actually going to be giving everyone who attends a PDF with 100 questions that you could add to your arsenal. I mean, that's going to be a nice little upgrade for you that you can count on. So you can count on a list of 100 kick-ass questions you could be asking. We're going to talk about five types of questions with examples to have in your arsenal. Now, right here, you get a disclaimer. Usually when you start hearing about types of questions, you say, okay, so he's probably going to talk about open questions and closed probes and all that. I'm not doing that shit. I'm just telling you, I've been saying this for years. I am not the guy that you go to for that. That's a Google search. There are a million people beating the shit out of that topic. I will not be one of them. I don't care if we up the price of the webinar. You cannot give me enough money to talk about that. I refuse to teach you things that you can get 5 million Google results if you just take 2 seconds and go through it. Everybody likes to talk about that stuff. It's beaten to death. I'm going to take you down a different road. That's why you hire me, by the way. Take it down the different road. Also, we're going to talk about the one type of question that will help you take control of your meetings again without being controlling. We're going to talk about the one type of question that dramatically increases your rapport and credibility. Do you remember before I said part of the benefit of asking kick-ass questions is that you develop rapport and credibility? There is one specific type of question that really puts that whole thing on steroids. And I'm going to teach that to you as well. And then I'm going to take you through three questioning flight plans to help you get better results. In other words, I'm going to give you certain sales scenarios that all of us experience, and I'm going to take you through how I would lay out my questions for those scenarios. So now, if this is something that interests you, and I'm hoping of all the things that I lay out for you guys, that this one is going to sell out, because, I mean, this to me is the most important part of the sales process. So many things, when we dissect something that just like somebody going silent or objections or people just, I mean, delaying and all these lost deals and stuff like that, many times it goes back to the fact that our needs analysis, our discovery process wasn't anywhere near as strong as it could have been. So this can make a huge difference for you. So if you'd like to learn more and reserve your spot, my advice to you is to do it soon before you procrastinate, and the next thing you know, it's another missed opportunity for you to get your year on track and just kick ass at a much higher level. Visit yoursalesplaybook.com/questions. yoursalesplaybook.com/questions. And with that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Visit us at www.yoursalesplaybook.com.